And welcome into the Anything Goes Wednesday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Wait. All right, that's better. We've got a special guest today here on the Anything Goes Wednesday edition. I've made it no secret that my favorite show over the last 20 years has been Survivor, because I think the stories are fascinating, but the most interesting aspect of the game to me are the people and their background and what else they have done. Andrea Belke has played Survivor three times, seasons 22, 26, and 34. She then went from the island to the red carpet, working the Emmys, the Grammys, and other award shows for People TV. She co-hosted a daily entertainment show for 5 years. She hosted a podcast. She hosted from Times Square's New Year's Eve ball drop. And now she does a weekly webcast for People TV and is a contributor to ABC's Good Morning America, among other things. Andrea Belke, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Doug, thank you so much for having me. Wow, when you said that list, I got sad because I realized that there's not going to be a New Year's Eve in Times Square this year. And I've done that job for 8 years, so that's a huge bummer, just with obviously being in a pandemic. But I don't know what they're going to do this year, probably just the performances.
I guess. I hadn't even thought about that, really. It's been on my bucket list to do that. Now, my wife is, she's like, great, knock yourself out. I won't be there. I'm like, oh, all right.
Don't do it, Doug. If you're working or have a pass where you can be in the middle, not with all the crowds, but I always feel really bad for the people that are just huddled up. There's no bathrooms. I mean, it's not the best.
They say wear a diaper.
Yeah. Well, we're told not to ask about that situation, because if you're watching the stream, you don't want to hear about people having to wear diapers. So we don't actually investigate what goes on, but you have to, because those people will get there at 7 a.m. and they'll be standing there freezing all day just to see the ball drop. I mean, it's a cool experience, but I love working it. I would never go just as a guest.
Right, because you can get inside, you can warm up, you can use the facilities that we all need to use and not have to wear the aforementioned diaper.
Did you think we were going to be talking about wearing diapers a minute into the...
Andrea, you never know. You know, and that's what I like about Anything Goes Wednesdays, because truly anything goes on Wednesdays, including apparently adult diapers. So how's your quarantine going, by the way? Because this year, my God.
It's crazy. Like, everyone's quarantine is going. I never thought I would be living in Milwaukee and working out of Milwaukee and being back home, because I moved to New York 10 years ago, and I kind of just thought I was going to stay in New York for a long time. But I always wondered in the back of my head, what would it be like to be closer to family? And my whole family's from here, or from Random Lake, Wisconsin. So the pandemic hit, and then I came back. I thought I was going to be here for 2 weeks, and so I didn't pack anything. Luckily, my sisters are the same size as me, so I was able to borrow their clothes. And I'm now living in Milwaukee. I have a car for the first time in a decade. I'm still working, surprisingly. So personally, it's actually been very eye-opening, and I've gotten some great perspective, and I feel happier in Wisconsin, which is something I didn't know was going to be the case. So I'm happy that I have this perspective. Obviously not happy that, you know, we're in a pandemic, but it's been really interesting.
Have you been back to New York just to clean up your apartment or anything?
I did go back once to pack up my apartment, which was really sad. I mean, just knowing I might not go back. So that was interesting. It's similar to how Milwaukee is right now, where there's mandatory masks, but I mean, New York obviously followed different protocol like earlier on. So going back there was very interesting.
So when you went back to New York, I mean, was it a ghost town? I mean, I've been to New York. I mean, you lived there for a decade. I never lived there, but I've been to New York, I don't know, a couple dozen times maybe. What are the streets like?
Yeah, it was interesting, because my favorite thing about New York is the hustle and bustle, the spontaneity of the city, being able to go out and mingle and meet people from everywhere. But that doesn't exist anymore. However, I will say, I was shocked that if you go to Central Park, there's a lot of people out and about. So the actual streets seem kind of dead, but there are people out at the park, and you are able to go to restaurants. Now that it's getting colder, they're going to probably, I don't know what they're going to be doing, because when I was there over the summer, they had all the tables outside on the street, almost gave it this European feel. So you could kind of go to restaurants and everything, but now that it's getting colder, I'm not exactly sure what everyone's going to do.
Let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to, I guess, the beginning of the Andrea story. Most of America first got to know you on Survivor as the Wisconsin farm girl, which is true, but you went to Stevens Point to study acting, right?
Yes. So I went to Stevens Point. Like you said, got a BFA in acting, and I am from a farm, but when I got cast on Survivor, they definitely had me really lean into that. And down to the clothes I was wearing. I remember when I went into finals for casting, they're like, what are you going to wear to your interviews? And I just, you know, regular clothes. And then they said, well, don't you want to wear cowboy boots and really show America who you are? And I was like, I don't really wear cowboy boots day to day. It's not. People that live on a farm don't actually wear cowboy boots usually. You wear tennis shoes or muck boots or something.
Right.
So, but they had me really lean into that. So I kind of have a little bit of the city vibe, but also the farm vibe as well.
Tell me about the audition portion of your Survivor journey, I guess. I mean, were you still in school when you tried out?
Yeah. So it was my junior year. I remember I didn't get into this play at my college that I really wanted to get into, and I was so bummed. So then my mom, who's a huge Survivor fan, she said, why don't you try out for Survivor? And to me, this was not connected at all. That's not what I wanted to do with my life. I wasn't looking to get on reality TV. I did like the show, but it just never crossed my mind to apply. And I also just didn't think that they watched the tapes. It just all felt very silly to apply because I didn't think there was even a chance that anyone would see it. But to appease her, I made an audition tape, and I leaned into the farm part. I was on my horse, doing a somersault off my horse. I was catching pigs.
Wait a minute. They told you to lean into the farm girl, but you're doing somersaults off of a horse catching pigs?
Okay, true. Fair enough. Well, so that was just to get their attention initially.
I bet.
Because I really just thought I had to do something crazy and be a certain type. Yeah, now that you're right. I can't really complain about them having me lean in when I was leaning in from the beginning.
Right.
But I just, you know, to market myself, that was kind of my angle. And they bit, and they called me up a week after I sent it in, and I thought it was a joke. So did my parents. We thought there was no way that CBS was calling me, but it was CBS. They did a phone interview, and then they asked if they could fly me out to LA. So then they flew me out to LA for a week. The problem was I was in school, and so I don't know what my first excuse was. I mean, it was kind of bad. My family, my mom is the sweetest lady ever, and she hates lying. So for her, it was so hard for my family to come up with these lies of where I was going. So I can't remember what the first excuse was, but I somehow got out of a week at school to go to LA. And they put you in these hotel rooms, honestly, kind of like quarantine. You can't see anybody. You can't leave your hotel room except for the actual interviews. And then when you go to dinner or anything, you have to stay by yourself. You see the other contestants, but you can't talk to them. You can't be close to them. And so you're just kind of eyeing people up and down, trying to figure out what their story is. Are they going to be cast with you? And you just do rounds and rounds of interviews. And as the week goes by, all of a sudden, people kept going home. So you would notice there were less and less people. And I made it all the way to the end of that week. And the final day, I met with Jeff Probst, Mark Burnett, and a bunch of the producers, and it went really well. I, again, was playing up the farm girl aspects, and then they sent me home, and I didn't hear from them for, I don't know, maybe 4 months, so I kind of forgot about it, and then they called me in June, and they said, do you want to play Survivor? In August, I think it was. That was my first season. That was 10 years ago, which is a long time. And so it wasn't even an initial yes from me, because my biggest fear was this was going to completely ruin my acting career, which is what one of the main casting directors told me the day I got to LA for casting. And I think because she's trying to scare away any actors that are just trying to get famous. And I really struggled with that. You know, if I do this reality show, there's a stigma of reality stars. Is this going to completely kill everything I've been working towards? But ultimately, Ultimately, I just decided to go for it. And that's when we had to come up with why I missed half a semester. And so we told my school, because you can't say that you're going on Survivor. You will get kicked off the show. It can't be leaked. So we said that I was going on a mission trip. Because how can you argue with that? Luckily, I was ahead in credit, so I was able to take off. I know, I felt terrible, honestly. But that is a pretty good excuse.
It's a great excuse. Oh, this is classic. Yeah. Anybody who's listening right now who has the inkling of wanting to go on Survivor and you want to make up something to get out of, if you're, you know, young like you were, your first season, go on a mission trip. Who's going to say no?
Because what else would you say? That you know, if it's school, that's the thing. Mono for a month and a half.
Sure, why not?
So I was able to take off. That was when I did my first season in Nicaragua. And then I came back and I was so skinny too. I lost, did I lose 15 pounds my first season? I think so. Yeah. And I don't have a lot to lose. So I was like really sickly skinny. And then, of course, when I got back, everyone wanted to talk to me about the mission trip.
Well, you lost so much weight on the mission trip.
Yeah. So I was able to pull it off. And then I was so worried that when it got announced I was on Survivor that my professors would be upset with me for lying. And they weren't. They were so thrilled for me. And it all worked out. But I was so nervous the entire time about bamboozling the school that I couldn't even really enjoy that time. But it all worked out. They were very supportive. And it was fun to have it air my senior year.
You mentioned something a second ago about the stigma of most Survivor contestants, because for most of you, the peak of the television experience is on the island. There have been a few that have gone on to do some other work in the entertainment industry. Elizabeth Hasselbeck was on season 2 in Australia, then went on The View for a long run there. Chase Rice, the country singer, was actually a contestant before anyone knew who he was. He was a NASCAR jackman when he was on Survivor. How hard for you was it to make that transition from reality competition show to then branching out into the other work that you've done?
It was pretty difficult, I would say. You mentioned a couple people, but there's been over 400, maybe close to 500 Survivor people, right, that have played Survivor?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely over 400.
It's definitely over 400, yeah.
And you can really only name a couple that have gone on to succeed in the entertainment industry separating themselves from Survivor. One that does come to mind is this guy I played my first season with, Matt Elrod, who actually changed his name to Wyatt Nash. And so he is very successful, but he literally changed his name.
Wow.
You know, he has a stage name. Yeah, if you look up Wyatt Nash, he's been on a lot of scripted shows.
No, I've heard the name. Yeah, I didn't realize that, okay, that was Matt.
Yeah, Matt Elrod is Wyatt Nash. And he is really successful as an actor in terms of, you know, he's constantly working on Riverdale and a bunch of other shows. I actually saw him, it was a really cool moment, last year at the SAG Awards. He was nominated with his cast for the show Glow, and I was hosting on the red carpet, or was that 2 years ago? It was either, I think it was two years ago, SAG Awards. And I actually got to interview him on the carpet, and I got to see him at the SAG Awards. So it was this really cool full circle moment, because I haven't seen Matt in close to 9 years. I really haven't seen him. So that was really cool. But to get back to your question, I think it is really difficult, because even though Survivor will make you interesting to casting directors, it doesn't necessarily guarantee you a job. And I think it actually works against you. I mean, for years, when I first moved to New York, I had a great agent and I was getting these great auditions. And I would make it to the top 2 or 3. And a lot of times the casting directors were so excited to talk to me because they were big Survivor fans. But then I think at the end of the day, they didn't really take me seriously as an actress. Like, they just wanted to talk about Survivor with me. And it got very frustrating. And I ended up booking a couple small roles, one on Blue Bloods and one on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, but, you know, a couple lines. And I just kept getting so close and, like, never landing, like, a bigger part. But that's also the reality for most actors, you know? I mean, I at least got a step kind of halfway through the door by getting an agent and getting these auditions. But I found it very difficult. However, when I stepped more into hosting, everything started to more open up because for hosting, it doesn't really matter what your background is. They encourage reality stars. They like that it's more personality based. And Survivor wouldn't hurt your chances at a hosting job. It would only make you more appealing. So then, and I found out I like hosting better. I just feel like I'm a better host than an actress. And once I made that distinction and once I kind of crossed over, I just felt like it was way more natural for me. So hosting, it's great. It only adds to, I hosted a few things for CBS. I did a Survivor After show. It all kind of goes hand in hand. So I think if you're going on a reality show, if you're trying to pursue acting, it might make it harder. But if you're pursuing hosting, it might make it better for you because then you have more of a platform.
I didn't know that you were going to be on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and it is a show that I watch, and I was like, is that Andrea? And it was, and it turns out that Rachel Brosnahan's a huge Survivor fan as well, so that kind of went full circle.
Yeah, I actually just talked to Rachel, and we talked about that again. I just interviewed her a couple days ago, and when I was on set, she was talking my ear off about Survivor and asking so many questions. I wasn't even in the scene with her, but she was there that day because she had some scenes later.
Sure.
And every time, I only had, I think, one line on that show, but every time they would call cut, she would come over and say, okay, so how do you get to Tribal Council? And she was obsessed. Yeah, she is the biggest Survivor fan, and I guess a really big fan of me, which puts so much pressure on it because I always worry that I'm a letdown. Because when you like someone so much from the show, you know, I'm just hoping that she's not like, oh, she kind of sucks in real life. But no, I think I've seen her a bunch since then, and we always just joke about it. How she actually thought when she saw me on set that I was a gift from the director for working so hard. She thought that
nice.
The director was like, oh, I'm going to
give you Andrea.
Oh. Yeah, and then she realized, oh, no, Andrea's actually an actress, and she got this part. So, but it was just kind of funny, something funny we joked about.
And Rachel Brosnahan, a Milwaukee native. I know she only was born here and spent a little time here, but yeah, Milwaukee native.
I just found that out. Yeah, I mean, she moved when she was 4, but we will claim her.
We will claim her, absolutely. As an entertainment reporter, we talked about the quarantine, how you moved back from New York City to Milwaukee. How difficult has all of this been to just do your job? Because the entertainment industry is New York and Los Angeles, maybe a little bit of Chicago. It's not Milwaukee or Random Lake, Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, it's been tricky, and mostly because of the Wi-Fi, which is just the most boring conversation whenever I'm just going off about terrible Wi-Fi. But it was the reality for a bit where I was first hosting at my parents' and I was doing Zoom, and my Wi-Fi, I mean, if you know anything about upload and download speeds, I mean, my download speed was like less than 2. I mean, it's barely functioning. So I eventually actually moved to Milwaukee for better Wi-Fi, which seems extreme, but where we are in the country, there's just no way to get better Wi-Fi. And I tried everything. I tried all these different providers, and I ended up would get it installed and it would work for a couple weeks and then stop. It was so confusing. I spent a lot of money on it. And then I eventually just moved down here. I have a friend that had an extra room, so it worked out. But yeah, so the Wi-Fi was a tricky situation. And then, you know, being here, it's kind of isolating because I'm just hosting out of a room, and my work shipped all of this equipment, which that was a whole hassle to figure it out because I'm not a tech person. So it's just me having meltdowns in this small room in Milwaukee. It's been great.
Yeah.
No, but it's also been like really great to have a job, and I'm so grateful I was able to make it work because right now so many people are doing their jobs remotely. So I was just happy that I was able to do this job remotely. But when things eventually start opening up, that'll be another hurdle because you're right. There aren't really a lot of red carpets in Milwaukee. It's not the go-to entertainment scene. But for now, it's working for me because I'm doing all these interviews on Zoom.
What's the best interview that you've done so far that stands out in your mind as memorable or meaningful to you?
Oh, man. That's a really tricky question. I would say, okay, the people that come to mind are the most famous, right? So interviewing Brad Pitt was pretty surreal because it's Brad Pitt. And I don't think the actual interview was that great. I think that my co-host and I were just kind of stuttering around, trying not to fangirl.
Like
over
the
him.
First time I interviewed Hank Aaron, maybe. It was like, you're Hank Aaron. Oh, my God.
Because usually as a host, you know, you're listening and you're ready to pivot and ask questions based off of what they're saying. But in the back of my mind, I have a couple other questions that I'm gonna ask. But with Brad Pitt, he walked up and everything just went blank. So I was just kind of, I was so glad I had a co-host because he picked up the slack a little bit. You know, I mean, obviously I'm professional, but it was just like, I felt, whoa, this is what people are talking about when they're starstruck. Because I'm not usually very starstruck. So Brad Pitt, the same thing kind of happened with J-Lo. And the J-Lo one was cool because on some of these red carpets, it's not as glamorous as it looks. You have to almost chase down the stars and get them to stop for you. And you have to be really aggressive, which I don't like being aggressive on carpets. It's just so uncomfortable for me. You know, I don't want to be the person, J-Lo, J-Lo, like running after them.
Sure.
But I just knew I had to come back with this. And so she turned the corner, and it just so happened that all the bigger networks, there was E and ET, they were already interviewing someone, so they couldn't bail on the interviews that they were currently doing. So I was free to like run and get her, and she actually stopped for me, and I got some great sound bites, and it was just crazy. Like, that's what carpets are like sometimes.
It sounds and like a scrum after a game at a locker room, like a Super Bowl is what I can maybe compare it to, because for me, it's kind of the same way. It's like, I need Tom Brady over here, but he's doing three other interviews over here, but maybe I can go get Gronk, and because he's standing over there by himself, and maybe I can do that. It sounds very familiar. A lot more glamorous what you do than what I do, because they're all sweaty and half naked, as opposed to the glam squad that has gotten the red carpet celebrities. But it does sound very familiar.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the carpet. So if I'm doing an awards show like the Emmys, it's different because they actually are bringing stars up to us. We're on the platform. It's not this scramble. But all of these other carpets, when I got J-Lo at the CFDA Awards, I mean, you have to be so aggressive. If you miss a beat, another reporter will jump in and steal your interview and you won't get J-Lo. And that's part of the job I don't like. And I think maybe it's the Wisconsin in me, where it's that Wisconsin nice. I don't want to step on anyone's toes. I want everyone to be happy. I don't want to jump in front of someone, but I really just try to channel more aggressive reporters in that moment.
Right. You just drop in so, and drop in.
Yeah, exactly. The which I find myself saying a lot now that I'm back in Wisconsin. And I don't know if I always said it or if I'm just noticing more, but I say ope.
It's definitely a Wisconsin thing. So
do you feel like, so that's similar to your experience. Did you ever have maybe an experience where you were trying to get someone and they got away, or you got someone big that you didn't think you were going to get?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. I got Bill Belichick 2 days before the Super Bowl, and I didn't think that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I got a one-on-one with Tom Brady about 3 days before the same Super Bowl, Super Bowl 39 in Jacksonville. And, you know, I'm coming back to where our workroom was, and your sports director asks you, all right, who'd you get? And this was when I was working at a national network, and I said, well, I got 4 minutes with Brady. And they just look at you like, well, I'm sorry, what? Yeah, I got 4 minutes with Tom Brady. Here you go. And you play it. And it's gratifying when you can do that, even though it's not my best interview. I mean, I was pulling him away from 10 other people, but still, the fact that you know, had his undivided attention there for a few minutes and that becomes memorable to you. I mean, some of the best interviews that I've done, though, are, you know, the sit down planned interviews where you can actually, you know, kind of think about what you want to ask. But yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of similarities, actually, believe it or not.
Yeah. And you got that interview and it probably felt so good. And then sometimes, though, it's the complete opposite where you'll just be so humbled. I mean, some of these carpets I have been so humbled on where I was kind of towards the end and I had celebs just completely snuff me and not talk to me or give me one word. And it's like, come on, you can't just give me a sentence, because I can make something with a sentence.
Yeah.
That could be a headline. That could be something. But it's interesting. It's that whole real life versus Instagram. On Instagram, everything looks amazing. But real life sometimes can just be tragic. I've cried after carpets before. I just wish the celebs or athletes would just say, if they don't like a question, maybe just say, I'm not comfortable with that. Like, example, Rachel Brosnahan, she's amazing. I asked her a question about her personal life. She's actually a little more private. Now, first of all, I don't really want to ask certain questions, but my producers make me, so I have to.
Sure.
And I knew that this could be not the best because she doesn't really open up about her relationship. And so I asked her about her relationship, and she said, yeah, I'm kind of private, so I don't really want to talk about that. And I said, absolutely, totally get it. All right, next question. So, and like, it's kind of awkward in the moment because I never want someone to feel uncomfortable. But, you know, if you just say, oh, I'm not comfortable, I totally get it, you know? And I think my backup, I've never used this, but I'm waiting for a celebrity to say, yeah, I don't want to talk about that. And then I'll just say, yeah, I didn't really want to either. Because a lot of times I don't have control over the questions, which is a frustrating thing, but it's also a highly produced show that I'm doing right now. So I get it. But yeah, I mean, I just, so, you know, so I'm always afraid that they're going to bristle or like be mean to me. And usually
it's
they're not.
Because we're Wisconsin nice.
Yes, yes. But I don't think I've ever had a celeb be super mean to me. You can just tell with the tone of voice or a look. But if they're on camera, they usually don't want it.
I think that you've done a really good job of being someone who's been able to pivot from Survivor into this new, it's not a new world for you in a sense, but it's something that you've been trained to do when you were working in acting, but now pivoting to being an entertainment host. But you're still obviously known by so many people as Andrea from Survivor. There are some people who, okay, that's what they're best known for, but they want to just turn the page on it. I think you've done a really good job of still owning Survivor, but also being, you know what, I've done Survivor, but I also do this as well. Not that Survivor isn't something that you will or want to talk about, but you've done a good job of being someone who's like, well, you know what, I have this other career as well. Was that difficult for you to kind of manage within yourself, saying Survivor maybe helped get me to this point, but I don't want to just be known as Andrea from Survivor?
Yeah, it was difficult to navigate early on because I still was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and the acting stuff wasn't really panning out as fast as I wanted it to. I think what happened was when I first did Survivor a decade ago, so I was 21, which is crazy. That's when I first met you.
I know.
And we've known each other for 10 years.
Isn't that crazy?
So cool. Yeah. You had me do the first pitch.
I did. I helped out with that. And I remember.
Which was a highlight for me.
Good. I'm glad.
I
remember we had lunch at Oakland Euros, and you said, you know, I'm thinking about moving to New York. I said, go for it. I remember that.
Yeah. And no regrets. I mean, it's been such a great experience. So now I forgot the question. Oh, yeah. Okay. So
navigating the two worlds.
Yes. So at first, it was hard to get out of Survivor land because I was going to all these Survivor charity events. And there's a lot of great charity events that are there. But then there's some that are more just parties. And I kind of found myself in this Survivor circuit. And then I was getting just wrapped up in drama with other contestants because I had voted them out, and then we're all at these events together, and then so it felt very high school. I didn't know, like, it was weird. I just found myself in the center of all this drama. So I decided, okay, I got to step away from Survivor right now because it's not a positive thing right for me, at least these events, right? And like, of course I want to support the charities and I still continue to do so, but just these other sort of events that people would fly to. So I just kind of stepped away from the community for a second and focused on my real friends and got very obsessed with my career. And that's where I switched from acting to hosting. And I actually made that switch before my third season of Survivor. So kind of early on, and I was working for some startup YouTube company or some like YouTube channel that had no views at all. And I was doing hosting for the first time. And those videos were super cringeworthy, but I was learning, I was teaching myself how to host. I actually had someone in the Survivor community make fun of me online and say, wow, you know, your career's going so well working for these YouTube channels that have no views, blah, blah, blah. And I'm actually good friends with this person to this day, and I tease him about it. But like I told you, somehow I got wrapped up in all this weird drama. So I had people like making fun of me, and I just was like, you know what? I'm going to make this work, and I'm going to have the last laugh. And I use it as fuel for my career because I can be very obsessive about stuff when I want something. So I really became like all in, and I was applying to any job you could find. I'm talking Craigslist. I'm talking random sites. I did a hosting job off of Craigslist where I made $100 with a chip. It was a check for $100 and it bounced. So, I mean, I was like, I was doing anything I could find. And I got this random job on Mandy.com that led to another job that led to me getting an agent, and then everything started to kind of come together. And then, I mean, the rest is history. Like, all of a sudden I booked this travel show, and then the New Year's Eve, and everything started coming. But what I always try to do is I kind of circled back to Survivor, where I ended up doing this Survivor after show for people. And I try to have my hands in a few different jars, and I always want to have that hand kind of reaching in the Survivor jar. And I love the Survivor fans and the community, and it's great. But I just have to know I can't get too far in there or I'll get wrapped up in drama. Maybe now that I'm older and I'm in my 30s, that wouldn't happen again. But something about me at 22 in the Survivor community was dramatic, probably for voting out Francesca twice. But I try to, Survivor gave me so much. I don't think I'd be where I am today without it, because when I first was auditioning for the People job, they looked at the amount of followers I had and the fans, and that really did help. So I kind of, just like you said, I try to keep the association with Survivor because I love Survivor so much, but I also try to make it a list of, on the list of things I've done, not the top priority.
So in that vein, I put it on Facebook last week when I knew you were coming on, if anyone had any questions about Survivor. You game to answering some listener questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Number one. Actually, you kind of asked it before. It might have been one that Rachel had, but somebody else asked, how long does it take to get to Tribal Council? Because when you leave, it's in the daylight, but it's nighttime when you get there.
Okay, this is an insider answer here. I think people have talked about this on podcasts before, so I don't think I'll get in trouble, but you actually do get in a boat and you go to Tribal Council, and so they don't show that part. So it looks like you're walking there, but really you do the walkout and then they film it again. So you do the walkout twice, maybe three times when you're all holding your torches and walking.
Okay.
And then you all have to, you're on a kind of a lockdown where you can't talk to anybody, and you get in a boat and then you go to Tribal Council, and then you wait in a tent and you can't talk to anybody, and then you're waiting in a tent for a couple hours, then you finally get to Tribal Council and you're there for a couple hours. So there's periods throughout the day where you're actually just sitting in a tent and you can't talk. And that's actually, I find, to be the hardest part about Survivor, is just the waiting game and just sitting there with nothing to do, just dying in the hot sun, not able to talk. So yeah, that's kind of something that a lot of Survivor fans, at least casual Survivor fans, don't know. But you do take boats or sometimes vans.
Gotcha. Okay. How do you navigate a tribe with members that do not want to talk to you?
Oh, I mean, I'm not the right person to answer or to answer that question, because I've had that happened several times and I wasn't able to crack the code. On Game Changers, Brad Culpepper did not want to talk to me. Debbie did not want to talk to me. I don't know why. I was weirdly ostracized from half the tribe. I think they just had, their tight group of people and they just didn't want to let anyone else in. And so I didn't do a very good job of talking to someone like Brad Culpepper. And I feel that would it have helped me? Maybe. However, he was such a challenge beast that he saw me as a challenge beast. So I don't think he wanted to talk to me. I guess I can't really answer that. You have to talk to someone that actually was able to talk to everyone on their tribes.
Fair enough. While you were playing the game, I guess maybe specifically early on, maybe in your first season, did you have any idea that some of the players around you, including yourself, would become known as Survivor legends?
I mean, I don't really consider myself a legend.
The rest of us do.
But that's very nice of you. I don't know. I mean, okay, so my first season, I won this final duel to get back in the game. And I beat these three strong dudes. So Grant, Mike Chisel, and Matt Elrod, now Wyatt Nash. I beat them in this challenge. And I don't think anyone thought I was going to win. And I remember when I won that duel, I remember thinking, oh, is this, I didn't think it was real. I honestly thought I was dreaming. I'm like, wow, this just changed things for me. Because I feel like if I didn't win that duel, I maybe wouldn't have been asked back. Because I didn't really do anything that notable that season. But winning that duel, I thought, oh, I think I could be asked back, possibly. Now, I wasn't banking on it, but I was like, I think winning that duel was like a big reason that, and then going after Rob was a big reason that I got to play again. So that was a moment where I thought, okay, I just kind of upped the ante here a little bit.
How much do the camera people speak to contestants?
Not really at all. We're told not to talk to them and just to ignore them, and which is actually really easy to do because first you get there and it's weird because you're on this island, you got to build fire, you got to build shelter, and then, you know, there's camera people in your face at all times. You're like, this is so bizarre. I'm on a TV show. What's going on? And then the reality sinks in and you realize if you can't make fire, you're not going to be able to boil water. You're not going to be able to eat. If you don't build shelter, you're going to be sleeping on the ground in the rain. So then you kind of forget the cameras are there, and it really wasn't that hard to ignore them. However, the more seasons you do, the more jaded you get. And so there were times on my third season that we would just outright talk to the camera people. They don't talk back. They will yell at us. But we'll just kind of joke around with them. And then sometimes at night when everyone's asleep and maybe there's one camera person there that isn't even filming, just there to see if anything happens, sometimes you'll chat with them a little bit.
Do you have producers that are there at all, or is it just the camera people?
Oh, yeah, there's producers too.
Okay.
So I would say on a day, a regular day, there's probably three cameramen. There's the audio guys. There's like maybe one or two producers.
Do you know anybody from the cast or from the crew? I mean, obviously from the cast, yes. But I mean, there's that separation between cast and crew. I mean, if you saw somebody that was like an audio tech or one of the producers like walking down the street or a camera person walking down the street, would you have that connection? Would you have that relationship?
Yeah, I think so. Because after playing three seasons, the more you play, the more camaraderie you have with the crew. And I actually got to go to Fiji the year after I did Game Changers, and I interviewed the next cast after Game Changers. So I got to see all of them in their element and see them at lunch and get to talk to them on a different level. So yeah, you bond with them, especially the producers that when they're interviewing you out in the jungle, you're talking for hours. And so the producers you have a good relationship with.
At what point does vanity go out the window when you get on Survivor Island?
Oh, man. I mean, immediately, because you don't have mirrors.
That's a fair point. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. And so you don't know what you look like, and there's really nothing you can do about it. But when you're bored, you know, you'll just pluck your armpit hair. Or you'll braid each other's hair. Okay. I mean, there's just nothing. I actually found that I looked better than I thought I was going to look because you get really tan, your hair gets fluffy. But then my third season, I don't know if it's just getting older or what's going on, but I got really bad melasma, which is just really dark spots on my face. So it just looked like I had dirt on my face the whole time. And there was like the melasma was very strong on my upper lip. So it just looked like I had a mustache the entire time. So that wasn't the best. But yeah, there's nothing you can do about it.
How nervous were you to see that first cut the first time that you played when you came back?
Well, yeah, in terms of what I look like and then going off the vanity thing, I was someone in college that would always wear makeup and at least a little bit. And I was actually nervous about going on Survivor because I just didn't think I mean, it's just stupid, insecure college stuff, but I just didn't think I looked good without makeup. And then after doing Survivor, I look fine. And now, I mean, nowadays, if I don't have to wear makeup, I never do. So that was kind of cool, just being like, oh, yeah, this is totally fine. And then in terms of the edit, I was so nervous and so much anxiety because watching, especially my first season, I cannot go back and watch it. I won't. It puts me in a really weird mindset because I don't recognize that person. It seems like it is a much younger version of me, but it just seems like a baby version of me who isn't that bright. I mean, you know what I mean? It's just watching yourself sometimes. I don't know. There's something weird about it. And I always would get a lot of anxiety about the edit and for every single season, and it never got easier. I always thought it would get easier as I got older. But I just would remember, remember when I said that really mean thing. And because you're starving out there, and I can be a little snarky sometimes. And I would just be worried, oh my gosh, they're going to show when I said that really mean thing. That's going to go viral and I'm going to be hated by the fans. And I would just think that about every episode. And I knew it was like, it's going to be fine. But I actually had to seek out therapy when the season was airing because it was just this anxiety I couldn't control. Just thinking about, oh my goodness, I did that thing. Oh my gosh, I said that thing. And thinking they're going to show you, all of a sudden the edit's going to change and they're going to totally bury me. Because they've done that in the past. You've seen contestants get terrible edits. And a lot of times it is kind of true to life, but they can make someone look really bad. Because when you're out there, you're hangry the entire time and you say stuff you didn't mean. So yeah, I mean, watching the seasons were not actually that enjoyable for me. It's a big, this maybe sounds kind of crazy, but it's like the one reason maybe I wouldn't play again is just for my mental health, because I don't like when it's airing. And you would think it would be the most fun you would ever have watching yourself on TV, killing it three seasons, and you would think that that would be enjoyable, but for me it really wasn't. And it's kind of across the board for a lot of Survivor players. A lot of Survivor players have had a lot of issues and anxiety and with watching the episodes.
Which leads to a tough question that someone had. Mm-hmm. You were at Tribal Council when Zeke got outed by Jeff Varner. Mm-hmm. How difficult was that for everyone? I mean, obviously it was toughest for Zeke. How tough was it for everyone else who was sitting there as well?
Yeah, that was really, really rough, because I still can't believe that happened. I mean, you're playing a game, and you are well aware that you are on a TV show. You don't forget that. You're on a TV show. Anything you say can be aired. So to cross that line, to do something that would actually affect someone immensely in their real life, I cannot believe it. And I knew Zeke before that season. It was kind of this weird situation where we knew each other and we got to play in the same season. And so I considered him a friend. And my heart broke for him. Obviously, you know, it was very, very difficult for him. And I think he's worked through it a lot. And I don't know. I mean, I know that Zeke's kind of distanced himself from Survivor at this point. And I just can't believe that happened. That was horrible. And then, unfortunately, stuff with me and Zeke kind of, we kind of had a falling out, which I didn't even know why. Even though I thought I was there for him, you know, he ended up, you know, with Game Changers, he ended up then coming for me, which was hard because I was like, dude, I was there for you. I'm your friend. And that whole season was just so dark. But yeah, it was just sad that that happened, and sad that it really put a damper on that season. Because when you think about Survivor Game Changers, you probably think about that moment. And after that moment, I just felt like the season was just gross, you know?
Yeah. When you've been voted off, I mean, different people have different reactions to it. Yours have been, I don't know if cheerful is the right word, but you've taken it more in stride than I think many of your contestants also have. Was that difficult?
Yeah.
Because, and then looking back on it, you talked about maybe a falling out with you and Zeke. Have there been relationships that have been permanently fractured because of that?
Definitely. Well, it's weird because I always am very cheerful when I get voted off. I think I go through the stages of grief or something, and mine are just a little out of order. Because for me, you would think that the first thing would be shock and anger, but mine is, oh, this is hilarious. And I think it's so funny. Maybe it's just a weird defense mechanism I have where I just think it's funny. And then I get very upset and bitter, which you do see hints of on my when I talked to Sarah on the jury. I was so hurt. I mean, that was cringeworthy for me because I left the season laughing, and then all of a sudden on the jury, I was just so bitter and hurt, taking it so personal. But yeah, I just think I think I'm able to see it more as a game because I've done the work and I've separated myself from Survivor like early on in my Survivor career, like what we were talking about before. I think I'm able to go, okay, Survivor is a game. It exists in this game, and everything else should just be fun. Be friends with whoever you want to be from the seasons, but don't take it so personal. And so for each of my seasons, I just remember, okay, this is a game, and I got duped. And if you get duped, it's funny. So that's why I usually leave laughing. And then, yeah, like it has affected relationships, but a lot of those relationships weren't actual friendships before the season anyway. So any friendship you create on the island has potential of being a fake friendship. You're just in this circumstance and you're using each other, and you maybe thought it was real, but maybe, you know, maybe it wasn't. And I learned that with Sarah. I thought Sarah was my best friend on the island. I thought she was my long lost sister. And guess what? So did every other person on that season. Mm. And so when she betrayed me, I was so, so, so hurt because I felt like she was my best friend out there. And then when I found out everyone else thought the same thing, I realized, wow, I got tricked by her. So, yeah, I mean, Sarah and I really don't talk, but I don't have any animosity towards her. I don't really have any animosity towards anyone. And Zeke and I, we're cool. We're not as close as we were before Survivor, but we were never like best friends. We just were acquaintances, basically.
If you had one or two former castaways that you could consider that, you know, someone that you're closest to from the show, I mean, who do you still talk to on a regular basis? Who can pick up the phone any hour of the day and just kind of catch up and see what's going on?
Aubrey Bracco. She's my favorite person ever. We really bonded on Game Changers at the very end, right before I was voted out. Because at first, you know, you're trying to read people. We only met up at the merge. I'd never met her before. And it took us a while. But once we gained each other's trust, we became really close. And then, of course, as soon as we got close, I got voted off, which really was terrible. But I felt like I was in love with her. I loved Aubrey out there. She's so cool, and we've kept in touch the most. I just think she's an incredible person. And then John Cochran, he's just the funniest dude. He won my second season. I love him. Every time I go to LA, I try to see him. I would say John and Aubrey I talk to the most. And then I still talk to Natalie Tenorelli. Then there's people from other Survivor seasons, but I would say, yeah, there's usually like one or two from each season I stay pretty close with.
Another viewer question or listener question is, what's the one behind the scenes aspect that you think would be entertaining for the viewers to watch?
Probably the mental breakdowns that people have that they don't actually show. I know you have some really rough days out there, and you can't even sometimes put a finger on why. But my third season, for some reason, I kept having these breakdowns. I would just cry uncontrollably, and I just didn't know what was going on. I think I just felt, I don't know, it was just weird. I just felt out of control, and I couldn't stop crying. And you never saw it. I don't even know if they showed me crying on Game Changers, at least with the edit. But there was one day where I was just feeling so out of whack. And I start opening up a coconut. And I was also really rusty, because at this point, I'm a New York girl. I've been in New York for 10 years, so I don't really cut open a lot of coconuts or do manual labor at all.
As opposed to on the farm where they're just falling off trees.
Yeah, so many coconuts. But on the farm, you're making fences and stuff.
That's
kind
fair.
Of the same motion. So I was trying to open this coconut, and I couldn't get it open for some reason. And as soon as you start doing something at camp, because it's so boring, the cameramen start running over and start filming you. And so I'm trying to open this coconut, and it's not going well. And all of a sudden, I have two cameramen around me. And I'm thinking, they're filming me about to have a breakdown because I can't get this coconut open. I don't want to be embarrassing. And so I was kind of being a jerk. So, like, as soon as they would start filming, I would kind of, stop doing it. I didn't want them to capture me failing at opening a coconut. So it was this weird, back and forth. And then eventually, I just broke down. I just threw the machete down and I started running. I sprinted into the jungle and I was crying, and I actually hid. I got down in the grass and I was laying on my stomach hiding from the cameras. And in that moment, I thought to myself, you have lost it. You fully have separated yourself from the game and you were hiding from the camera people. This is really bad. This is bad. How are you going to recover? I could see one of the producers looking through the grass trying to find me. And I was just having a spiral. I don't know what it was. I just felt like I was losing my mind. And eventually they stopped looking, because also they didn't care that much. There wasn't anything going on that day. I think we had won a challenge, so we weren't even at tribal council. Didn't matter. But I just felt crazy, and eventually I came out and I went back to camp and I apologized and I said, hey, I'm sorry. I just had a mental breakdown over a coconut. And then they told me, oh, Troy Sand said, oh, by the way, that coconut was a really old coconut, so I couldn't even open it. I was like, no. So here was the coconut that you weren't even able to open it. And I had this full spiral. And then the thing about leaving camp is, it doesn't matter how pure your intentions are or how much you're breaking down. Everyone's going to assume you're looking for an idol. So Sarah and Zeke thought I was looking for an idol. Really, I was crying in the grass. So that stuff could be entertaining if they showed more of it.
Final listener question is, do you think there are too many gimmicks and idols in the game now?
Oh, absolutely. I can't keep track, honestly. If I ever play again, I'm going to have to rewatch the last 5 seasons and actually take notes, because I just think there's too many gimmicks. And I think they don't need to do that. Survivor's so interesting with the characters that you don't need all these. What did they have in this last, the Winners at War?
The fire tokens.
I didn't like fire tokens. I don't like all the weird, because I feel like it just changes the game so much.
I didn't like the idols when it was Rob and Sandra. Number one, Sandra didn't say two words, I think, the entire time that she was there. It was all Rob. It just kind of struck me as weird. There's no there.
Didn't like that. Don't like the fire tokens. I don't like Edge of Extinction. I mean, look, I'm very grateful that I had Redemption Island, because that's the only reason I got back in the game. So as a player, you love that, right? You love Edge of Extinction because you get to stay in the game longer. But as a viewer, I want to see your torch snuffed and I want to see you gone, even if it's heartbreaking. Even if it's heartbreaking, I love the finality of that. And I just think to have them there, it just feels weird. And it felt really sad to see all these legends on Edge of Extinction, you know? I mean, I think of my favorite seasons, and there weren't really any gimmicks. I think of Heroes vs. Villains. You know, you had idols. I don't think you need much more than idols, and maybe a couple little twists here and there. But
they seem to be really easy to find for the viewers at home. I don't know. I never played, and I never looked for one, obviously. So maybe I'm just projecting. It just seems like there's an idol out there, and here it is. I found it. Whee!
I think sometimes they actually are just very easy. I think that it goes to whoever is able to leave camp, and people don't suspect them. The problem is I always felt like I couldn't leave camp because people are going to start talking about me and thinking that I'm looking for an idol, you know? And I don't know, it's just tricky, but I think also sometimes it just looks easy because they can't show 10 minutes of someone looking for an idol, you know? So you see them find the idol because they have to cram so much into an episode. I think it's like 50-50. Some are pretty easy. Some took longer to find. They just have to show it in 30 seconds.
So here's the final question that I have for you. It doesn't have anything to do with Survivor, but you've done 3 seasons of Survivor. You have been a daily host of an entertainment show. You now do your weekly show. You've done, as we were talking about at the beginning, Times Square, not having to wear an adult diaper. you did a podcast for a while. What do you want to do? And maybe it's impossible when we've all had to rethink everything because of the pandemic. And, you know, we've all had to adjust. You moved back from New York to Wisconsin. What do you want to do moving forward, say, in 2021, 2022, 2023, if it was a perfect world?
Oh, Doug, that is such a hard question for me, honestly. I think it's because through my whole life, I never really had long-term goals. I've always had more short-term. So when I got into hosting, I was like, okay, pop culture hosting especially, I was just like, okay, let's just do this until I don't want to do this anymore. I've never, you know, had dreams of, oh, I need to win an Emmy. I need to do this. So it's kind of hard for me. I think that I like the path I'm on. And in my ideal world, I would continue doing hosting, but it would be more a travel show or a morning show. Or, you know, I've been a correspondent on GMA, so maybe something more full-time there. I think I would love to kind of stay on that track. I'm also open to something completely different, and I don't really know what that is. I have been getting into photography and videography with my sister as a backup plan in case, you know, I lose my job, because we're all kind of thinking we're going to lose our jobs. So, you know, that I actually really enjoy that. It's not as completely thrilling as working red carpets, but I think I'm just kind of – I wish I had a good answer, but I also – I'm trying to, it's going to sound so corny, but I'm just trying to follow my happiness. And I am completely shocked that being back in Wisconsin has made me so much happier. So I might just kind of chill out here and see what happens, and maybe even pursue more local media. You know, I think I just want to be happy, you know?
That's fair.
I wish I had, I don't know, I think that this is what I've figured out. I've gotten to do some really, really cool things, but did those career milestones bring me happiness? They brought me a lot of excitement in the moment, but it doesn't last very long. It's kind of fleeting. Now, in my ideal world, I'd be able to do the exciting job and then have the more stable home life, which right now I don't. I'm not married. I don't have kids. I don't necessarily know if that's what I want, but I'm open to it. But I think I'm still kind of searching for what I want my life to look like. which I also think is okay. Don't you kind of agree? I feel that we all think we have this plan and then
the pandemic
shuffles around. Yeah, and then right. And I think that's why I'm okay with kind of just being open to things, because I feel that everyone is just open to things at this point, because we're all dealing with similar issues. So many people have lost their jobs, and it's really hard to find jobs right now. And so I think I'm just kind of happy to be working, and then I'm just going to adjust, just take, you know, one day at a time.
Well, whatever you do next, you know, I'm a huge fan. If you do play Survivor again, I like it when you play because it gives me somebody to root for. And I like having that rooting interest. But no matter what you do, you've got a friend and a fan in me. Thank you so much. I said I wouldn't keep you an hour and I lied. So I kept you a full hour here on the podcast. But thank you so much for the time.
Well, thank you, Doug. You've been so awesome and supportive throughout this last decade of our friendship. So I really appreciate you, and I support you and all the things that you do.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. So the Mutual Admiration Society, I appreciate it. And when the pandemic ends, I owe you lunch. So we'll actually see each
Sounds
other
good.
In person as opposed to talking over the clean feed. But continued success, and we will talk to you soon.
Who knows what clean feed is? Do your listeners know?
No, you and
little,
I.
Little insider talk.
Have you ever heard of it before today?
Yeah, but your listeners are going to be like, wait, what is clean feed?
It's like Zoom, except different. Did anybody know what Zoom was before?
You feel like we just lost everyone. They're like, we understood until the clean feed comments.
No. Well. No, I try to take my listeners behind the scenes. That's what I do. Oftentimes
no,
poorly.
Well, thank you.
Andrea, you're the best. Thank you so much.